Hi, I'm Brian McCreath, and this is The Answered Question from WCRB in Boston for June 9th, 2017. This Sunday at 7 p.m. on WCRB in Concert, the Academy for Ancient Music Berlin is on the air in a Boston Early Music Festival concert recorded in March, one that included the music you're hearing. It's a piece by Zelenka called Hypochondrie, and you'll hear about it on this podcast. Alan McClellan will bring you the entire concert on Sunday, the first night of the 2017 week-long festival that gives Boston Early Music Festival its name. And throughout the coming week, we'll be recording more concerts to bring you in the coming months. In the meantime, you'll hear from two members of the Academy for Ancient Music Berlin, or AKAMUS for short, on this podcast. Also on the podcast is Andres Nelsons, who led the Boston Symphony in a series of Brahms-centric concerts last fall. You'll hear the second of those concerts tomorrow night in an encore broadcast, so for this podcast, we'll revisit my interview with Andres. First, though, the Boston Early Music Festival and a concert they presented in March by the Academy for Ancient Music Berlin. It's a program called Of Frogs and Men, with music by Telemann, Geminiani, Vivaldi, and others, and I had the chance to talk with two members of the group about it and about their new recording, which is made up of concertos by Telemann. Bernhard Fork was the concertmaster for the program, and Xenia Löffler played the oboe. They were just getting ready to play the last concert of an American tour, and Bernhard Fork told me why they were glad it was happening in Boston.
I have to say it's something special to end here in Jordan Hall. It's such a wonderful hall and wonderful sound, and great to be on stage there.
The ensemble has been here several times, I think, right?
Yeah.
So what do you look forward to when you see that Jordan Hall is on your schedule, Bernhard?
First of all, it's so beautiful, and the audience is close, and this wooden stage, and the very special warm and clear sound. So I feel very comfortable.
Yeah. Xenia, how long have you been a member of the Academy?
Already since 16 years now.
Oh, wow.
So for quite a long time, actually. But the orchestra exists since 82.
So right, it's the 35th anniversary this year.
It is.
Yeah.
September.
In September is the official anniversary.
Yeah.
So when I arrived in this orchestra, I had the feeling it's quite established, and it was quite a thing for me to join them. When they asked me, that was a big surprise, and I'm still very happy and lucky that I'm a member of this orchestra.
Yeah. Bernhard, what are the origins of the orchestra? You haven't been in since the beginning, have you?
Or almost.
Almost. Okay.
So we have two members really from the beginning. Raphael Alperman, the harpsichord player, and Dörte Wetzel on the second violin, and she brought me in just half a year later, because there was a lag. Somebody, we started in East Germany, so somebody left after a concert tour and stayed in West, so we need another violin, and I just started my violin study, and so I came in. It was a surprise for me as well, like for Xenia. But now it's almost, for me, almost 35 years. It's a very, very long time.
That's a fascinating origin story for your own involvement, that someone defected, and you were the replacement for a defector.
Yes.
And so that actually leads to a question that I have, that I've always wondered. I've heard the Academy before, and I love all the recordings, but I would like to hear from each of you what you think the sound of the Academy is, how this ensemble is different from other ensembles. And so I'll ask you, Xenia, how do you define the sound of the Academy for Alte Musik Berlin?
Well, I think this special sound comes from the special kind of energy which the group has on stage, especially on stage. They take a lot of risk, and there is a lot of fun also. Of course, we work very seriously in the rehearsals also. But nobody is afraid of something during the concert, and everybody is really playing with full energy and full heart and soul, and I think this makes a very special sound.
And Bernhard, is there any way that its origins, the ensemble's origins in the East at that time in 82, inform the kind of identity of the sound or the way that the group operates?
I don't know if this is possible to say that it comes from the East or from the West.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
What is the group, the special mentality of the group is it was a very closed ensemble, because this was our way to survive, to have our own thing. We really could work on it, and it was not official. It was just, we had to fight a little bit to get our way, and it was a very special, intense work at the beginning. And working now, rehearsing now, it's also very intense. Sometimes it's annoying because it leads of not lots of energy to get through. But it's true that the ensemble has a lot of power then on stage. And for me, it's very important that the power is in the rhythm. And it comes very much also from our bass group. And sometimes we are more rhythmical than having a beautiful sound or something. So the language is very much influenced by the rhythm, I think. But of course, it's good. We work with so many different guests and conductors, but mostly soloists, because we play without conductor. And this give us a new idea sometimes, or a new influence. And then it's good after. In 35 years, not good just to stay like you in the way you began 35 years ago. Yeah. So it needs some changes and things like this. Yeah.
But I'm fascinated by what you said at first, and tell me if I've got this okay, that I've got this right, that part of the identity of the group is the close-knit quality of the players, because it was what you had, you could own at that time.
I think so. I'm not, maybe Xenia, she came later. Is it a possibility? Maybe it's not. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Well, when I arrived, it for me, it felt like coming into a family.
Yeah, it's a bit like this, yeah.
Right.
And it still feels like a family. It's my it's my musical family. I'm doing many other things with other groups also, but coming back to Arkamus, which is most of my work, of course, it's like coming home. Musically.
So within this family, I'm interested in how decisions are made, and specifically how this particular program of Frogs and Men came to be. Xenia, are decisions made by a collaborative group, or do individuals come up with ideas? And then how did this particular program emerge from that process?
Well, in general, we have a group of people who are interested in thinking about programs and in thinking about our future like aspects about soloists or conductors. So we can discuss everything because we don't have a chef in a way. That's a big advantage, I think. Sometimes also difficult. Democracy also always is a little bit difficult.
No doubt.
Needs much more time.
Needs much more time. And this program especially, I think that was, we didn't discuss this one so much. That was between the concertmaster, I don't know if you were involved actually in this program, and the management, and also the agent here in the States, because they know what the public likes here.
That's right.
And which kind of...
But the idea of the concert of this program is just to have the imitation of nature. That's why the title, and nature is not, it's sometimes really imitating birds or frogs or what else, cats and dogs and things, or imitating, but also imitating people. So there is the organ in the farina, and you can't really imagine sitting a organist, not a very good one, sitting on a very bad organ in a little village, and it sounds terrible, but he doesn't stop, and it goes on, and things like this. Or we have this hypochondria, Zelenka. So that this speaks also about the human characters and the way of human behaves. Our last piece, that's why it's Folia, so about madness. And so it is the idea of, and it's always a question in music, how much is music imitating things, or how much should music avoid to imitate things and just be music and having a different language? So we have the big difference between Telemann and Bach, for instance. You won't find any birds in Bach music. There is other connections in a totally other way. But this was fascinating to look, and it's really this beginning with Farina. Farina, Carlo Farina, is so funny because it's all the technique for violin playing. People normally think it came up 50 years ago with modern music, so taking the wood of the bow, knocking at the violin, and things like this. So the modern music is invented much earlier. That was always modern, and they always tried to do everything with the instrument to get the right character or the right imitation of something.
Carlo Farina is not a composer that comes up on programs too terribly often.
No,
so,
that's true.
Yeah, yeah. So, Xenia, what is it about his music that is distinctive or surprising compared to other composers?
Well, you should ask the violin player. For me, as an oboe player, the music is a little bit too early, but he knows, I think he knows.
But he was a fantastic violin player coming from Italy.
Okay.
His father was also a violin player, then he came to Germany, to the wonderful orchestra in Dresden, and he met Schütz there. He was for 3 years there, and he composed this piece in Dresden. So that's why it's a connection to, it's not a typical Italian piece, it's a mixture of Italian and German. Then he went to Bonn and Vienna, so he was quite international in his very short life. And yeah, what's also good about this music, it is very fine, very special, but it's so much humor in it, and humor about so we have to love about ourselves. So it's not to love about somebody. So it's humor in the best way.
Yeah, yeah. Xenia, tell me about Zelenka, and I find his music really fascinating, but I'm honestly not quite sure why I find it fascinating. What is it about Zelenka's music that is a little bit different from other composers who were, I think he also was based in Dresden. Am I correct?
He came from Bohemia, from Prague, and then he arrived in Dresden in I think 1710. And well, for us oboe players, he's a very important composer because he became famous again nowadays when the trio sonatas were discovered in the 60s. And from then on, they discovered all the big church pieces, masses, oratorios, and also he also composed some orchestra pieces, and the Hypochondria is one of them. Unfortunately, we don't have so much instrumental music by him because I really find it fascinating from a harmonic point. It's very surprising, and you will hear it in the Hypochondria, the big surprises, harmonic changes. Hypochondria in A major, it starts in A major, very happy piece, and then it suddenly becomes completely different affect, changing to minor in very unexpected moments. And it's really crazy music, and I love it. I love the trio sonatas, of course, big pieces for us, very difficult to play, very long pieces, exhausting pieces. But it's really always worth to go for it when you play Zelenka.
Yeah,
all oboes love Zelenka, but he was a double bass player. That's funny. He was not an oboe player. He was a double bass player.
The group is just getting ready to release, as we record this, a new recording of music by Telemann. And what was it about Telemann's music? He's also on this program, so maybe that helps to inform this program as well. But what is it about Telemann that the group really loves to grapple with?
Yeah, I think Telemann is one of the most important composers for the group. So we did a lot of Telemann work. And the funny and interesting thing is that you, after so many years, you discover pieces by him, never performed or very, very seldom. And it's every piece is different. Every piece is a masterpiece. It's really amazing how, when I was a child, the title was Vielschreiber. That meant he just wrote a lot. And it was really a bad mind about him. And it's not true. Of course, it's amazing how many things he composed. But he is, for me, he didn't want to be complicated. It's not, the music is not too difficult to play or things, but it is so full of ideas, and he really tried to use all different affects and the different way of the French style, of the Italian, of the German, the alla polacca. So we have in the other program we did on this tour, we had Les Nations, the suite. It's so funny, the Turkish from Switzerland, from Moscow. It's really like a painter. He can make painting from everything he sees, and so it's really great.
And what's also special about Telemann, that he used all existing instruments of his time for his instrumental music and also for the vocal music, sometimes for the instrumental parts and the vocal music, but that's really, he used everything. For example, there is one very funny piece, well, the Frog concert is also a funny piece, but there is a funny piece called Grillensinfonie. Grille is cicada.
Cicada.
Yeah. And this, for example, uses a piccolo flute, an oboe, and violin, and two
double
basses or violone.
Violone.
So very funny instrumental combination of instruments. And
the recording, the piece with the harp and the...
That was an arrangement by us.
Okay.
We made this. Originally, it's for three violins. But there will be a very funny piece on the CD.
Yeah.
Originally, it's from the Tafelmusik. It's a concerto for three violins. And we made an arrangement. It's a big secret, but the CD will be out very soon, so
yes.
No problem.
Yes.
For mandoline and
Hackbrett.
How is it called?
Cimbalon.
Oh, cimbalon. Cimbalon. Yeah, yeah. The Hungarian instrument.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, and harp.
Oh, wow.
And that sounds really. I think it's exactly in the idea of Telemann.
Yeah.
If he would have known these instruments and would have had the chance to put them together, it fits perfectly.
Well, Xenia Leffler and Bernhard Fork, thank you so much for taking a little bit of time out of a busy schedule to talk with me. It's really wonderful that you're here back in Boston, and we're looking forward to the concert. Thanks a lot.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Bernhard Fork is the concertmaster, and Xenia Leffler is an oboist in AKMUS, the Academy for Ancient Music Berlin. They'll be on the air this Sunday at 7 p.m. on WCRB in concert with the Boston Early Music Festival, and you'll have the chance to hear that broadcast on demand beginning Monday morning when you visit classicalwcrb.org. The actual festival that gives Boston Early Music Festival its name begins on Sunday and runs for 1 week, and along with a huge number of concerts by performers from all over the world, there are four performances of the centerpiece opera, Andrei Kompra's The Carnival of Venice, and the festival exhibition, which is an enormous trade show for early music. But don't let that term trade show intimidate you. Everyone is welcome, and you'll be utterly fascinated by what you find there, from instrument makers, recording companies, and a big CD store. To get more of a flavor of the festival, check out our Classical Performance podcast, where Alan McClellan brings you some highlights from past festivals. Tomorrow night at 8, in an encore broadcast of the Boston Symphony, Hélène Grimaud is the soloist in the second piano concerto by Brahms with music director Andres Nelsons. When the concert took place last fall, I got together with Andres to talk about all of the Brahms symphonies, and it's a conversation worth revisiting. It also benefits from a bit of a setup, so here's my own intro. Andres is someone whose mind is always moving so quickly that he sometimes moves from one thought to another almost before he's done with the first one. And given that English is his fourth language, it can be pretty impressive to hear how he negotiates all of that. When I talked with him, he had a lot to say about Brahms symphonies, mostly without my prompting. To get started, though, I asked him if these four symphonies were pieces he came to really early in his life, and whether he had ever done them all within 2 weeks.
I have been introduced to Brahms music very early. So about the same age when with Wagner, so about 5-6 years old. At that time, I liked Wagner more. I still like Wagner very much, but I understand now. I feel that I understand the genius of Brahms. Because it takes time. He's absolute genius and the master of form and also of her writing. When you perform the symphonies, you have the moments where you feel like you're in a paradise, because he's one of these very seldomly seen composers, actually, when you think, who is accepting life how it is So he's accepting life. He's melancholic. He's angry sometimes. He's sad. He's confused. But he's accepting life. And through that sadness, what we actually can hear in music, this typical or great Brahms melancholy or nostalgia, or which is, you know, so sad. You can't say it's sad and depressive. It's sad and beautiful. So therefore, I think he's accepting life, and that's, for me as a Christian, a religious, it's very symbolic as well, and very, that means a lot to me in those terms. Because when we see Beethoven is struggling, also Schumann, you know, who was a great, you know, mentor of course of Brahms, and then Mahler or Wagner, all of these composers, I think they were struggling all their lives. And I think if they would knew that maybe you should accept things sometimes like it is, maybe they wouldn't have written these great pieces. So, but anyway, I'll answer your question. Yeah, Brahms symphonies, I have been introduced very early, and actually I have conducted all of the symphonies very early and many times. But I must say, in 2 weeks' time, all four symphonies and two concertos, I think not really. I have many Brahms cycles, but it's very, very interesting because all of these symphonies are like pearls. They're all genius and great. You can't say one is stronger than the other, because, of course, it's very subjective in any case. And they all to make a journey of Brahms' life. I think you can see the journey through his works. And of course, adding the piano concertos, which is also almost like two symphonies. I mean, first symphony, of course, knowing Brahms, he took almost 20 years to compose this. He was so careful, so cautious what he could write, because, of course, it was Beethoven was just died, and Beethoven Ninth Symphony, you know, it was the last big symphony which. What you know, everyone thought, what can you compose after that? And even that was so strong and so revolutionary that even now, if some people think it's something not possible to repeat. But what Brahms did somehow, of course, being very careful and taking time, he created this great style of combining respect to tradition, respect to form, classical form, but the soul, you can hear in all the symphonies, the first symphony maybe is being more of what, admiring Beethoven and setting the tone for the new symphony, which is possible to be fresh with the same form, but adding the personal feelings and emotions and a great craftsmanship of instrumentation. And this is—it sounds like an amazing journey. What we hear in the first symphony, second symphony, of course, is maybe more related to Clara Schumann and to more pastoral feelings of Brahms. Because this is not a secret that he was in love with Clara. In the meantime, Schumann was his mentor, and so Brahms lived in the house of Schumann and Clara. So of course, it was more rather platonic love, and only after, when Schumann died, then Brahms had a maybe closer connection to Clara, and she was also older than Brahms. But still, I think these feelings of love or admiration, even platonic, you can feel in much, maybe more in the second symphony. Again, he knows that he has to accept things how they are, and he's accepting, and he's happy about that. He's sad as well, but this sounds so, it feels like this symphony is hugging you. The third symphony more is, I think, maybe dedication or admiration, of course, of Schumann, of Robert, and of course already the tiram tim tataram pom pom pom. It reminds of Schumann's third symphony, the Rheinisch. Ta ta tam ta dam pom pom pa barum. In the meantime, it's also one of the most intimate of Brahms' symphonies, and there's a lot of chamber music element, particularly second and third movement is really chamber. And of course, he continued the idea what Schumann said, frei aber einsam, so free but lonely. And Brahms continued, so he did frei aber froh, so free but happy. So even if sometimes you look at Brahms' picture and you see the beard, you think, oh, maybe he's angry or he's not happy. He's actually very happy somehow. I think he was really a very nice person who loved, who didn't have family, but who loved children and who really was a happy person. And even though he couldn't experience the love the way other people did. But and it comes, of course, the Fourth Symphony, which is another jewelry. I think, to me, it is it's Brahms himself. It is his inner world. As much as he wants to show his inner world to us, I think it's maybe how at the end he is feeling. It's sad, but it's also beautiful. So he knows life is, you know, it's a journey. There has been sad moments, and it's been really sad. And Schumann is gone, and but the final moment, again, he goes even more back. He goes to Bach, and he confirms his admiration to the form, which even goes beyond the classical form, which is a Bach, which is a Chaconne, and these are absolutely geniusly written variations on this theme, which is probably one of the most genius of Brahms actually works, is that the last movement of the Fourth Symphony. Of course, the whole symphony is amazing. And then, of course, in the Fourth Symphony comes in the second movement, this probably one of the most beautiful 16 bars of string playing, which there is an unwritten competition that orchestra's competition, string instrument orchestra's competition, who plays more beautiful this theme. This is this, you know, that's is it who has the most beautiful sound, and it's so beautiful. And so we, of course, were rehearsing and also performing. I'm constantly in love with the sound of orchestra, and of course with the orchestra generally. But it's great surprises, you know. It brings this kind of deep, rich sound. It's so beautiful. And then orchestras are enjoying playing his music also because they can simply play beautifully, and it's like hugging. Brahms is hugging you, you know, with his beard. And because without beard, I think it's also interesting that the pictures where he's without beard, he looks very young and very naive and very boyish in a way. It might be speculating. I think he grew his beard just to have a little bit of weight on, you know...
Gravitas.
Yeah. But the real Brahms is without the beard, so it's very...
It's like a mask.
His beard is like a mask. And people say, oh, Brahms, he's very angry, he's very strong. I think, of course, his music is, there's a lot of this, but in so many moments you see then the Brahms without beard, you know, as a metaphor as well.
Well, that's great. Andres Nelsons, thanks so much for all your words and your thoughts about Brahms. Really looking forward to the concerts.
No, thank you. And I also want to mention, of course, a great collaboration with Elaine Grimaud, which we have started already with her in the two concertos. And of course, we are so, so happy with also wonderful pieces by our young composers. And we already performed Eric's piece, and it was a great reception. And we are performing also Andre's piece next week, and this is both wonderful pieces. And I'm really, really happy and proud of them that they have composed such a nice pieces.
Wonderful. Thanks a lot, Andres.
Thank you. Thank you. Great pleasure.
Andres Nelsons leads the Boston Symphony in an encore broadcast tomorrow night at 8 on WCRB. The program begins with a BSO commission, Everything Happens So Much, by Timo Andres. Then Hélène Grimaud is the soloist in the second piano concerto by Brahms, and Andres conducts Brahms' fourth symphony. That's one of the performances, by the way, that was recorded for the recent BSO release of all four of the Brahms symphonies on the BSO Classics label. That's it for TAQ this week. You can subscribe to this podcast in iTunes or through your favorite podcast app. And you'll also find us on WCRB's Facebook, Twitter, and SoundCloud pages. Thank you to Bernhard Fork and Gesenia Löffler of Akkumuus and Andres Nelsons, as well as the staff of the Boston Early Music Festival and the Boston Symphony for making these conversations possible. I'm Brian McCreath. Thanks for listening.